I'm so excited about today's conversation with Dominique Williams about cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, or CBTI.
Me too, because of course sleep has started to elude me again, and I feel like I've pulled out all the trusty tools and nothing seems to be working. It works for a bit and then...
Life happens, things change, mm-hmm. your body changes, and you might need to tweak what was working or add new tools to your toolkit.
Well, yeah, the current tweak that I've added is trying to coffee my way through this, and guess what? It's not working.
Good thing we've partnered with Endy for our Reclaim Your Rest 8-part sleep series. Each month, we're dedicating an episode to deep dive on sleep, everything from how it impacts our weight, health span, and even muscle recovery to the evidence-based tools leading experts recommend.
And who better to partner with on this, really, than Endy, Canada's leading mattress company? Not just because their mattresses are amazing, but because they really understand how vital a good night's sleep is to helping us be able to shine, to living our lives and using our brains, to like our health span.
To be, don't forget, being nice humans.
Just occasionally, though. until this partnership, it never even really dawned on me how important a mattress was to the perimenopause toolkit.
Oh, yeah. Completely missed that really potentially life-changing piece, frankly. Yeah. Speaking of perimenopausal toolkits, our conversation today on CBTI is an incredible tool everyone needs to know about. For all our listeners who wake up wired at 2 a.m. and can't get back to sleep, or go to bed at 9 p.m. exhausted but lie there wide awake until forever, CBTI might just be the answer.
Okay, and stop, Mick. I had an epiphany after the conversation. Mm. Thinking about everything Dominique tells us, CBTI is a lot like sleep training, a baby, but for adults.
I had never thought. You're so right.
No, seriously, stop, right?
Yeah.
It's like all those, like when I was pregnant, I read all the books. I wanted a toolkit before I was sleep deprived, and I had like every option available to Finn. So I was like obsessed with it.
Of course you were, in true Michelle fashion, but true. We spent years supporting our kids' sleep and things like blackout curtains, white noise, wake windows, consistent bed, the whole production, and mm-hmm. it did eventually work.
Yeah. And then we hit perimenopause and we forget that there's tools and there's routines, and maybe we could apply this to ourselves.
Thankfully, Dominique Williams from Coven Women's Health specializes in CBTI and is going to give us some evidence-based tools we can start using tonight.
CBTI, sleep training for adults.
If we taught our kids to sleep, we can teach ourselves to sleep.
This is Perimenopause.
This episode is brought to you by Endy, Canada's best mattress company, trusted by over 1 million happy sleepers. More couples today are experiencing what's called a sleep divorce, sleeping apart to avoid annoying things like snoring, overheating, or one person tossing and turning all night long. At Endy, they get it. Everyone sleeps differently. That's why their mattresses are designed to help couples rest more comfortably together. With breathable open-cell foam, cooling gel, and motion-isolating layers that help keep movement and heat from spreading. Because better sleep starts with understanding, communication, and a mattress that works for you both. Learn more at endy.com. That's ENDY.com. Dominique, welcome to the show. We're so excited to have you here today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Great to see you again.
Yeah.
More than the once a year at the National Menopause Show.
That's right.
Although we're both in Waterloo, we do need to go for a walk someday.
Yes. When it's better weather. Australians don't do well with this.
No, neither does this Canadian girl.
No, that's true.
Fair. So let's jump in, Dominique, because we are here today to talk about sleep and specifically how to get back to sleep. And it's a big deal. It's a big thing for a lot of women in perimenopause.
Yes,
we're dealing with sleep issues from night sweats, racing thoughts, suddenly not being able to get to sleep through the night anymore. And I understand that the first lines of therapy is CBTI, cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. And this is one of your specialties. So
that's right.
Can you please tell us, like, what is that exactly?
Yeah. So a lot of people might be familiar with cognitive behavioral therapy, where we identify unhelpful thoughts and behaviors and then work to try and change those for sort of a better emotional well-being. CBTI is sort of an offshoot of that uses sort of similar approaches, and it's now considered the gold standard and first line of treatment for insomnia, not medication. So I have a lot of physicians that will refer to me when people are having problems with sleep. I really love that this approach doesn't try to force sleep. It just aims to reset the nervous system and retrain the brain's relationship with sleep. So we know in perimenopause in particular that sleep can become fragile. That's maybe a light word for
elusive, like, non-existent.
Yeah, shit. It's really hard. And I also have personal experience with that. So yes, you're right. We have hormonal shifts, night sweats, heightened anxiety response, and then midlife life stresses and life stresses in general, and they all collide, and then bed can become a source of frustration rather than rest. So CBTI works by trying to break that cycle and rebuild sleep confidence.
I like that. Build sleep confidence. Yes, please. So we did a little research and we found a little bit more detail about what CBTI involves and things like sleep restriction, relaxation training, obviously, cognitive restructuring. Are we correct?
Yeah.
And maybe could you take us through those elements and what they mean?
Yeah. So I'll go through them and maybe expand on them a little bit. But you're 100% right. These are the approaches that we use in CBTI. And for some women, we might use all of these approaches depending on what's going on. And for some, it's just going to be sort of based on what they're experiencing. So one of the first things that we ask you to do is to track your sleep with a sleep diary for maybe a week or two. So we can just really identify, is it problems falling asleep? Is it night sweats waking you up? Is it the 2 a.m./3 a.m. wake, which I'm going to get to that. So what exactly is it? We say you're not sleeping. What is that? What does it look like? But you're right. As soon as we use the word sleep restriction, women go, wait. I'm already hanging on by a very thin thread here. I am exhausted and I'm running on fumes. And now you want to restrict my sleep. So usually I will use the word sleep compression. It's a little bit gentler. So this is not about depriving sleep, but consolidating your sleep a little bit, because a lot of us will lay in bed for 9+ hours, but we're only actually sleeping for maybe 5 to 6 hours. And what that does is it teaches your brain that bed is a place to be awake, right? So with sleep compression, gently tighten the window so that the body relearns efficient sleep. Because when we're laying there for all of these hours and not sleeping, that's not efficient sleep. You're just reinforcing that bed is not a really safe place to be. It's associated with maybe tossing and turning and stress, and now we're hot. The reason that it's probably a good idea, if you're looking for a therapist that provides CBTI, you want to make sure if you think it's because of things that you're experiencing as a result of perimenopause, that they have a good understanding of perimenopause, because this sleep compression, we do it a lot gentler for someone in perimenopause, because as we said, there is enough going on without then saying, oh, by the way, we're going to restrict your sleep. Stay up really late, get up a little bit earlier. It's a lot gentler for someone that's experiencing perimenopause symptoms. But that's in a nutshell, you know, we are compressing it a little bit, but we just go a lot slower for someone in perimenopause.
Interesting.
Yeah. So don't panic if you hear someone say that.
It's not a torture method. Don't find a new practitioner. Yeah,
you know, it's not that bad. I think the next one that we probably work with quite a bit, and again, I usually get a fairly strong reaction from women with this one, is the stimulus control. Because here it is where we are trying to reassociate the bed with sleep or sex. And again, in perimenopause, it might not be as much sex, but we want to associate the bed with sleep at least, not stress. So what happens is if we are laying awake for any period of time, we start thinking, we start scrolling. And when we start thinking, if we're not sleeping, it's not usually helpful thoughts. It's, why aren't I sleeping? Oh my gosh, tomorrow is going to be a horrible day. I've got an important presentation to give. You know, I know if I don't get enough sleep that I'm just a wreck. I haven't slept in 2 or 3 nights. Like, you know, what's
going
on?
Why did I say that thing last week to my kid's teacher? Yeah.
And by the way, here's a list of all the reasons why I'm the worst parent in the world. And you know what? Why don't we bring up a mistake we made 3 years ago just to make it interesting?
Fair, yeah.
Your thoughts are not going to good places. So your brain starts to link the bed then with alertness, with wakefulness. So CBTI, again, gently, we're trying to interrupt this pattern because in perimenopause, the 3 a.m. cortisol spike is real. So we know that hormones and cortisol, depending on the time of year and the time change, 2 a.m., there's a natural spike. So this is normal to wake at this time. It's just not maybe normal to stay awake. So the hormones are actually what's causing the awake, but it is your brain that keeps you awake. So the CBTI is going to address what's keeping you awake.
So would it be fair to say then, if I'm understanding you correctly, so in a regular sleep pattern, any human, they're going to have that cortisol spike around 2 or 3 a.m. The problem is in perimenopause, because your hormones are playing, you know, whack-a-mole or whatever, jumping around all over the place, that becomes an exacerbated cortisol.
Exactly.
Spike.
Exactly. Exacerbated cortisol, exacerbated hormone fluctuations. They rise at that time. The body wakes, but the mind panics. So the thing with the stimulus control, where I usually get the big like, wait, is we don't want you to associate the bed with wakefulness. So after 15 minutes, if you are still awake, you need to get
up. Stop. I don't even want to hear it. No.
I know. I'm so. This is like, I told you, women.
I knew
do
this
not,
was coming.
Well, anybody,
no.
But women in particular. No. And even with myself, I'm like, no,
it's
I don't want to get
there.
Up. It's cold. No. It's dark. Bed is so nice. No, we need to get up out of bed, and then we need to go and do something that is, you know, slightly interesting, but not stimulating, because we want a certain amount of boredom. We want you to do something like reading, maybe listening to some music, even some different yoga poses that, you know, you can go on YouTube and just search like yoga poses for sleepiness or, you know, drowsiness. Do a couple of yoga poses, something that's not going to, you know, completely wake you up and stimulate you. And then when you start to get sleepy, you go back to bed again. But 15 minutes later, if you are not asleep, you got to get up.
Really?
We don't want you. Yeah. We don't want the brain to start associating that this is the place where we don't sleep. So you got to get up again. This won't go on forever.
No, I'm not.
I absolutely promise you.
Seriously? Yeah. Like, so
seriously, it won't go on.
Maybe a couple nights, though, I might be out of bed more than I'm in bed after 2 a.m.
That's right.
My goodness.
Yeah. And it does, like we said, it doesn't go on forever. I know it feels like it at the time. And this is when probably maybe the next little bit that I'm going to talk about sort of comes in, where we're talking about our thoughts and how we view our sleep. But it is hard, I think, to sort of wrap your brain around that. It seems counterintuitive that I'm trying to sleep, but I've got to get out of bed to do that. It does work. But it's not the fun one. I will say with CBTI, there is a little bit of a commitment. So first of all, like I said, there's going to be a couple of weeks where maybe you're keeping a sleep diary so we can see exactly what's going on for you. And then there is going to be experimentation. And some of them might not be completely comfortable. Like I said, it's cold. I don't want to get up out of bed. I don't want to go downstairs, you know. But I promise you, we're experimenting so that we can find something that works for you.
Okay. Carry on.
It's carry next. On away from the not so fun ones. So the next one is the cognitive restructuring. And this is sort of very similar to what we would see in traditional CBT, where we're working with the thoughts that fuel whatever is going on. In this case, that fuel insomnia. So I've already mentioned like what tends to happen is we're awake and we go, if I don't sleep tomorrow, it will be a disaster. And we're trying to replace these thoughts with more accurate, calming truths. Because saying something like tomorrow will be a disaster, that's what we call a cognitive distortion. You might be tired, but it doesn't mean the day is going to be a disaster. We've all had days when we're tired, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that's a bad day. It just might mean that we're tired, more tired than usual. Might mean that we have a little bit more brain fog, which we see in perimenopause, and sleep is a big part of that. Doesn't necessarily mean disaster. So these are sort of the common things we have, like I'm broken, something's wrong with my hormones. If there's one thing that women can take away is that your sleep isn't broken and neither are you. That you're going... Yeah, I mean, insomnia is learned. It might be driven by hormones. That's why I said the hormones might trigger the sleep disruption. We're looking at what is keeping that sleep disruption going. So insomnia is kind of learned by the brain. So it can be unlearned, even in perimenopause. So if you take nothing else away from the podcast, take that. You're not broken. And your sleep isn't broken. It's going to be okay. But it may take some time. And some patience. And like we said, a little bit of a commitment. Yeah. So working on all of those thoughts. And like we said, those thoughts aren't great in the middle of the night.
So
this is not a good time.
So if I'm having that thought, how do I put the brakes on it? And is it putting a new thought in my head? Like, do I go to bed with a mantra that if I wake up, this is what I'm going to think instead? Or
So what I like people to do first is, part of what we do in CBTI is a little bit of sleep education. Because the first thing I think is, like when we were talking about, there's this natural rise in the hormones. When people understand a little bit of the physiology, that can even take away a little bit of the anxious thought about, why am I awake? What's going on? So sleep education, when women learn that waking at night is normal, that alone can lower that anxiety. Sleep changes happen across our lifespan, and insomnia is actually maintained by the fear of wakefulness, not the wakefulness itself. So the first thing we might do is a little bit of education. So when you're waking up, you understand that your body is naturally waking up at this time because of this reason. So we're normalizing that for you. Waking is common. Waking in perimenopause at this time is common. It's not necessarily insomnia. And then we want to identify the loop. So like I said, what are the thoughts that are coming up? I woke up. I checked the time. I panicked. Now I'm awake. Now I'm sort of reinforcing that loop. Absolutely no clock watching. No clocks near the bed. No phone near the bed. If you need to use it for an alarm, turn it over. Because again, what happens is we pick up our phone and we go, oh gosh, it's 3 o'clock. Okay, if I go to sleep now, I'll get 4 hours of sleep. That'll be fine. We're awake half an hour later. Okay, if I just shut my eyes and go to bed now, I get 3.5 hours of sleep. And inevitably what happens is it's 2 hours later. It's 3 hours later. It's 3.5 hours later. Well, I might as well just get up. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter if you have 3 hours until you get up, or 10 minutes until you get up. We want to retrain the brain to get back to sleep. So no looking at the clock. Turn the clock around, cover it up, put your phone across the other side of the room. Because if your alarm does go off, if that's what you're using it for, it's actually better to, and this is again uncomfortable, I know, get out of bed to turn it off. Because if you hit the snooze because you're tired and you go back to sleep, we're not increasing the sleep efficiency.
Fair.
So no clocks.
Okay.
All right. And then we're looking to interrupt the cycle. And we can do that with a couple of the things that, like you said, are these the components that make up CBTI. One of them you mentioned was the relaxation training. And so that's not necessarily about like calming down harder, but regulating our nervous system. Because again, we know in perimenopause, those fluctuations in estrogen mean that we have this sort of heightened, you know, anxious response. For sleep, we need to have the parasympathetic system turned on. We call that the rest and digest stage. And so how do you do that? Well, maybe it's better to talk about how don't you do that. Googling symptoms in the middle of the night is not going to do it. Looking at the clock every 5 minutes and going, oh, I'm still awake, not going to do it. Rehearsing mentally what your next day is going to look like, probably not going to do it. So what kinds of things do we work on to help you with that? So, and this might be a bit of a personal preference. Some people really like guided imagery, and there are lots of apps that you can use for that, that are just a really nice, gentle, you know, guided kind of, you know, you're by the beach or wherever is a nice, calm place that you feel like. Some people use imagery. We teach them how to do sort of imagery on their own and ground themselves with sort of body-based grounding. So we're tapping into all of the senses, different kinds of paced breathing. And it sounds a little bit sort of counterintuitive because a lot of women have hot flashes at night. Mm-hmm. But if your hands and feet, your periphery are warm, that can be really calming. So even if you have nothing on the rest of you, even just your hands and feet being warm can be really nice and calming. And then cognitive shuffling. And this one you can use if you're actually out of bed as well. If you're looking for something that's sort of, you know, mildly interesting, but you have no emotional attachment to it, because we don't want to start having that nervous system response. We use something called cognitive shuffling. There's a couple of different ways you can do this. The one I like the best is you choose just random object that you have no attachment to. So let's just say an apple. And then you start with the first letter, A, and you just start naming in your head anything you can think of that starts with an A. Aardvark, ants, airplane, whatever it is that you can think of. And then you move on to the P, and then you move on to the next P, and then you move on to the L, and then you move on to the E, right?
And hopefully then, by the time you get to the second P, you're
so... Hopefully you're so bored, you're just like, yeah, this is not fun. I'm going to bed. If it doesn't, you know, if you need to go to another word, yeah, you go to the next word and you pick something else, like, I don't know, you know, coffee.
Banana.
Start with this. Yeah, something that you don't have any kind of like that's not going to get you. You know, if my husband picked the Oilers and the Oilers happened to lose that night, don't pick like the Oilers because now you're getting worked up.
So can I ask you, so those first relaxation techniques that you mentioned, we should be doing that in bed, those 15 minutes while we're trying to get back to sleep. And then if they don't work, we get out of bed and
you
we
get
do
out
maybe
of the bed.
This cognitive... what did you call it?
Cognitive shuffling.
Shuffling.
Cognitive, so that's so you're literally, when you is shuffling through images, and, you know, if I said apple, I mean, the first thing that happens is you picture an apple. When your mind is shuffling through those images that we said don't have sort of any emotional attachment, it can't worry at the same time. That's not how our brains work. We can't just stop thinking. You're thinking 24/7, even when you are asleep. And our brains don't work in the negative. So if we just say, don't think about that, this is not the time to think about that. Like, don't think about that. We think about it.
So it's just if I'm anxious in general. Like, this doesn't have to be.
Yes.
I've never.
Yes. Like we said, these are very, very similar approaches and techniques that we use in more traditional cognitive behavioral therapy. When we're working with women who may have the heightened anxious thoughts in perimenopause or just in general, these are very, very similar techniques. Breathing, breath work is probably one of the first things that we put in place.
Yes.
And again, there's lots of different kinds of breath work. I like the diaphragmatic breathing or the belly breathing. You might hear it be called belly breathing, mostly because there's lots of research behind that type of breathing that says if you utilize it, you practice it, you put it in place, it's actually very, very effective in switching on the parasympathetic nervous system and calming yourself down.
Yes.
So yes, you want to do one of these things, 15 minutes, if no sleep, get out of bed, dim lights, boring activity, and then back to bed when sleeping.
Can it still be blackout? Do I have to put lights on?
No, you don't have to put a light on. If you're comfortable kind of walking around, you're not going to, you know, fall over in the middle of the night and kind of hurt yourself or something like that.
Love what you're hearing? Don't miss our weekly newsletter. It's got expert advice, evidence-based resources, practical tips, and of course, a little humor.
Go to thisisperimenopause.com to subscribe and join the thousands of women who have realized they need and deserve better.
I think for maybe for my fellow type A listeners out there, You just touched on something in the context of practicing breathing. And
yeah.
So that was a big struggle for me in terms of relaxation techniques, because I didn't at the time, this is, 10 years ago now, really understand how to build a habit. And so I would try relaxation breathing, but in the height of when I needed it, which is not the time. And then I'd be frustrated because it wasn't working. Mm-hmm. And it actually ended up contributing to my anxiety spiral. So just, I think you mentioned practice somewhere in there, and that really tweet.
Like, yes.
You know, yes. I joke that I hate meditating, and I don't really, but it's a legacy thing for me where I'm like, well, I tried it. I can't do this. You know, that whole type A, if I'm not good at it, then I'm just not good at it. But you it's good to practice these things during the day before you're in your stress spiral at night and awake and it's dark and I just, hot tip from me to you.
Yes.
That will
yes.
pay off.
Yeah. Yes. And so, yes, whenever I'm working with someone that's having anxious thoughts and we're putting sort of, some breath work into place to help with the body responses that come up with anxious thoughts, if we're going through something like, let's say, diaphragmatic breathing, and the other reason I like this one is because it doesn't ask you to hold the breath. I think when you're having an anxious thought, asking someone to hold the breath for something like, I know a lot of people like box breathing. I don't think that's always helpful if you're spiraling a little bit with thoughts. We're trying to calm the body and holding the breath can feel a little bit stressful. And so, yes, the first thing I will tell them is you need to probably practice it 4 times a day. I would ask you to practice it when you first wake up. Maybe at lunch or some kind of natural break in the day, in the afternoon, if you have a little bit of time, and it only has to be a couple of minutes at a time. And then when you're going to bed. So there's two ways that this helps. Like you said, first of all, it starts to train your brain that this is how we calm you down. This is how we calm down. And it's sort of like when you've done a sport for a long time or you do something in the gym, some kind of activity, and you've been away for a little while and you go back to it and your body just remembers how to do it. It's exactly the same with breathing. When your body and your brain learn, oh, this is how we calm ourselves down, then what happens is if you are having anxious thoughts, anxious body response, and you start the breathing, your body remembers, says, oh yeah, that's right. This is how I calm myself down. The other part is some of the research shows that something like diaphragmatic breathing, when it's practiced long-term, consistently, day in, day out, it can prevent having the body response in the first place. So it's kind of a twofold benefit that you get from something like that. But yeah, and as far as meditation, I'm actually not very good at traditional meditation myself. So, but I think people think you have to sit there and sort of, chant something or have this mantra or whatever it is. I would say things like vacuuming. For me, it sounds ridiculous, but it's meditative because it is a repetitive movement. You're not necessarily having to concentrate your thoughts on it. Walking can be meditative. Washing the dishes can be meditative. Things like coloring or painting, any of those things where it's just sort of that repetitive moment, that's meditation. I think people are already doing it. They just don't really realize it. But yeah, breath work, no problem. And then the last part of the CBTI is the sleep hygiene. And I think most people are fairly familiar with, sleep hygiene and the things that you should have in place for a good night's rest, like, a dark room, a cooler room. Now, in perimenopause, and I will say my poor husband has to live with this, I literally have the heat off and the window open in the winter and deal with it because I have to have freezing. It has to be freezing. You just add a blanket or something, but I have to be freezing. So people know, yes, going to bed at the same time, waking up at the same time, having a gentle wind down routine at night, maybe warming the body for a certain time before you go to sleep, like having a shower or a bath or, some kind of heating pad, because when you cool the body down, you get nice and sleepy, not eating too much before you go to bed. So those kinds of things I think people are fairly familiar with, but Again, when we're working with someone who's experiencing symptoms as a result of perimenopause, we're going to include probably a few different strategies. So temperature regulation is going to look a little bit different because we know that, you know, hot flashes that happen at night, the night sweats, really interfere with sleep. So do you have sheets that are cooling sheets maybe? Are you really cooling down the room? Do you have sleepwear that might be a little bit more cooling? Can you leave changes of sleepwear beside the bed? Do you have water? Do you have a cooling pack so that you can, if you need to get changed, get changed, you know, get yourself comfortable, get back to sleep? This is another one that we all don't like to hear, but alcohol timing is a little bit more important in perimenopause. I know, and most women know, if you drink wine, you probably are going to have a hot flash at night. Like I know that. So I have to sort of be aware of that. If I'm choosing to have wine, I'm choosing to have a hot flash at night. That's the way it is for me. But alcohol timing might be something that we look at if your sleep is being disrupted.
I love that you said alcohol timing and not like taking it out.
We're not taking that away from anybody. Please,
thank you, darling.
Please, no, we're not taking it away. But yeah, it might be the timing or, you know, when we talked about sort of some of the cognitive restructuring and the thoughts, I have accepted that this might happen. And so I'm preparing myself for that a little bit, that I've got things in place because I may have a hot flash if I choose to have a glass of wine and it's dinner time. I'm not advocating day drinking.
Oh, but day drinking is the absolute best.
It's the best. Just drink at 2 o'clock and then you're good.
And then you're fine.
Or brunch.
And then you're
or
even
brunch.
Better.
I mean, stop. Yeah, let's do breakfast.
Just start in the morning.
A little tequila and your Caesar or Bloody Mary.
Yeah. Yeah, do
it first. You day drink if you don't start at breakfast. I mean, honestly, no. So how long does it take to start seeing some of the results of CBT?
Yeah, so again, like we said, it's a little bit of a commitment. Most people I work with will start to see some benefit within 2 to 4 weeks, with continued gains, I would say, over 6 to 8 weeks. And we're continually tweaking things, but it's not sort of a one and done. It's not like, you know, you said, well, I tried breathing, it didn't work. We're asking you to try it for a certain period of time and kind of run that experiment. Use your sleep diary. What changed? What didn't change? We're coming back. Okay, now let's try maybe something like this. Put that in place for a little while. So it is a little bit of a time, but yeah, some people in 2 to 4 weeks will say, you know, I'm already seeing some benefit.
And seeing some benefit means, like, at what point do I get to sleep through the night again? Like, is that ever a possibility again?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's a possibility again. Everybody's perimenopause, menopause journey is a little bit different. Some women have no hot flashes. Some women have hot flashes for several years. Some women have hot flashes for years and years and years. So it may be that you still have a bit of disrupted sleep, but you can get back to sleep really quickly. Like you've worked with yourself enough to know it's okay, I can get back to sleep. I think it depends what's going on with you and what else is going on in your life, other health issues. So it is a little bit individualized. But yes, I think it's possible to have good sleep efficiency.
Could we So 10 years ago, I started waking up at 2 a.m. and a frying pan couldn't get me back to sleep at that point. I was just so wired and frustrated and it was awful. And yeah. I think that's probably not uncommon. I know it's not uncommon in perimenopause, especially now there's more, you know, in the menopause community, there's a recognition now that sleep disruption is often the initial symptom, even long before other things like period changes and or hot flashes and or more traditional symptoms start kicking in. I'd say that even my experience, also the anxiety. Could you walk us through, you know, I've come to see you, I'm desperate, I haven't slept properly in a long time, and 2 a.m. was my magic hour. It was like clockwork. Between 2 and 2:02 a.m., I was awake. What would you counsel me to do?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, at a clinic, which is Coven Women's Health, we're a virtual online clinic that offers really multidisciplinary approach to supporting women with hormone health. So not just perimenopause, might be PCOS, you know, might be post-cancer, but we take a very holistic view. So we're going to do a very, very good workup to sort of make sure that it is what you think it is. I mean, we want to make sure that physically, you know, we're not missing anything for you. Mm. So it might be ordering some blood work for you. It might be talking about other things that you've got going on that might be physiological. And then, you know, yes, if you, if we found that hormone therapy was a good fit for you, it could be that you start hormone therapy. And, you know, some people will say to me, well, if I just take hormones, won't that just stop everything? And I think these things work really well together. So The hormones, like I said, are going to treat that biological, but CBTI treats the relationship with your brain and sleep. Because by then you may have learned that I'm awake, I'm not getting back to sleep.
Saturn is there. And I think you touched on earlier, and maybe you could remind us what you said, but it was that it's not the insomnia. The insomnia isn't keeping you awake. Or what was it that you said? It was really good, and now I can't remember it. It was
probably can't remember it.
Yeah. but essentially, what happens when... This is like a joke.
Yeah, so the hormones, I think I said the hormones will trigger, the fluctuation in hormones trigger the sleep disruption, and the CBTI addresses what keeps it going.
I think that's the key thing. Yeah. So the hormones can alleviate that boom, you know, feeling like you're going to bounce out of bed, or that exacerbated cortisol.
Yes.
Response, if you
and
will.
And hormone response.
Normal.
That's right.
But the CBTI, so it's not, again, back to, we always say, it's not one thing. You need an extensive toolkit. So please continue. I've interrupted you.
No, that's okay. That's a very good point, because some women will say, if I just take the hormones, wouldn't it be better? And yes, sometimes that will be enough. Some women will take the hormones and find that some symptoms are improved, but sleep issues or disruption keeps happening for a variety of reasons. And then some women, like myself, are not appropriate for hormone therapy. And so we need to put other things in place. If you came to see me, you know, like I said, first of all, I'm going to sort of ask you to keep a sleep diary so I can see exactly what's going on. But also, I like to take like a biopsychosocial approach when I'm working with women. So yes, physically, what's going on for you, not just perimenopause, but what else is going on? Like some women, you know, we've got aging parents, maybe we've got children growing up and leaving home, or in adolescence. We've got relationships. Maybe we've got a partner sleeping next to us that's snoring. There's all kinds of things going on in our lives that can also impact sleep. So we're going to be looking at all of those things and other psychological things as well. It could be that you have a history of low mood. It could be that you have a history of anxious thoughts. What else is going on for you? Because it's not just about kind of working on one thing. This might be the priority. You might start with sleep and that might influence other things, but we're also going to be maybe working through some of those other things as well. And hopefully they work together to kind of improve both of those things or three of those things for you. So it is quite in depth. And I will say at Coven, when you do an intake with our health coach, it is very, very in depth. We want to work out exactly what your goals and your needs are and how we can kind of serve you best.
And is it like a 6-month program is it one-off visits, or how does that all work?
Yeah. So I think what makes us different is, I mean, first of all, our medical director is Dr. Michelle Jacobson, who is
unbelievable.
And she's a rock star.
Yes.
And just so wonderful to work with, just amazing. And so you know that you're getting like the very, very best care as far as your hormone health. Our other differentiator is you're matched with a health. And so after that intake, they're going to be saying, these are the programs that we suggest. So it could be, you know, the hormone health program. And as part of that, you're going to meet with Dominique and she's going to start you with some CBTI. We have a dietitian on staff, so it could be even looking at your caffeine intake, your alcohol intake, all of those things that might be, you know, interrupting your sleep as well. So we have a variety of programs. Again, it's a little bit individualized. You can choose a pre-existing program, which might be sexual health or weight management or hormone health, or yes, you can book with one of our practitioners in one off.
That's awesome. And yeah. And is it Ontario specific, your practice?
Right now it's Ontario specific, but we're hoping in the near future to make that maybe Canada wide and maybe even beyond that, which would be really exciting. Yeah.
Oh, yes, please.
And so if I can't get to Coven and to you, what kind of practitioner am I looking for to help me with my CBTI?
Yes. So you want to make sure that someone is trained in cognitive behavioral therapy. And hopefully on their profile, they're going to say that they're also trained in CBTI, which is a little bit of additional training. Do they have to be trained as a perimenopause practitioner? No. But then, I mean, I'm a little biased because this is what I do, but I think it's really helpful when they have a good understanding of what someone is dealing with in perimenopause, because again, I said, you know, it's a little bit of a different approach. We're going to be, you know, not maybe being as forceful with sleep restriction, compression. We're going to be, you know, looking at gentle movement throughout the day, you know, to see that, you know, if we can sort of get you feeling good and sleepy. Light exposure might be something that we do a little bit differently, the alcohol timing and the temperature regulation strategies. Yeah. So it really is helpful if someone has that as well.
When you say that, do you mean Menopause Society certified?
Necessarily. You know, usually they will have on their profile if they work with perimenopausal women specifically. So I'm not even sure if there's a designation for therapist. There may be, but you know, I've had some additional training with perimenopausal women, and usually they will have that in their profile. But these are the kinds of things most therapists will have, you know, a 15-minute free meet and greet. So these are the kinds of questions that you can ask them ahead of time and just sort of say, this is what I'm experiencing. Is this something that you feel comfortable addressing? And see if you're a good fit. Yeah, I was also going to say there's some really good apps on CBTI, and some people find those really helpful. They'll have tools on there, you know, with the guided imagery or visualization, maybe the cognitive shuffling or some of the meditation things, you know, some of the strategies like getting out of bed. They'll have sleep diaries and things like that. So, you know, you might be able to find a good free app as well.
Okay. Do you know the names of any?
I do have one on my iPad, actually, and it's called CBTI Coach. And this one has sleep diary tools, assessments, and some resources. So that's one that I will sometimes give to people and say, hey, if you like kind of to be on your phone or your iPad for your sleep diary, you can use this electronic one. Probably some paid extras on there, but you can start with it in the free form and go from there.
Thank you. That's a great recommendation.
Yeah.
And we will include that in the show notes as well. Mental note, Mikkel.
I've written it down. Mental notes.
Okay. No longer work.
No longer work. This has been amazing. Dominique, thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
You kind of alluded, or you actually outright stated earlier, you know, if there's one thing you take away from this podcast, but maybe we'll have you reiterate or give you the opportunity to answer in a more fulsome manner. What's the one thing you want every woman who's been struggling with their sleep to know about CBTI?
I would say that CBTI can help even if you've been struggling for years. Mm. It works by retraining the brain and the nervous system to feel safe while you're sleeping again. And a lot of women think insomnia is permanent. It's not. So please, please, please get the help. It's so important that you sleep well. It's so important.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hey,
thanks so much for listening to the show. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and write a review,
so more women can find us and get a better understanding of what to expect in perimenopause.
This information is not intended as medical advice. The intent of this information is to provide the listener with knowledge to support more efficient and effective communication with their medical.